Hello and welcome back to the Most Dangerous Podcast. How are you, Fraser?
I'm wonderful. Do you know, I actually feel like we've had about a month off. It's weird.
It does feel like a long time, doesn't it? Yeah, I agree.
Had a week off and I'm just like raring and ready to go. Although I broke my hand.
You were just saying off air, yeah.
Yes.
Because you fell over.
I had a fall. I've got to that age now.
But be your hip next.
I know. I'm at that age where people no longer laugh when I fall. They run over worried. But yeah, broke my hand, so that's been a bit of an inconvenience.
That's a bit of a pain, isn't it? Yeah. So yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for your patience. We've had only a week break, but we are back. This is technically season two, although nothing's really changed, I don't think. Maybe a few minor changes here and there, as you'll hear as the season progresses. So you broke your hand. Anything else interesting happened to you this past 2 weeks, I suppose?
Not really. Nothing I can talk about on air, but no, it's just been a nice break.
Yeah, it's been refreshing. Although yeah, I don't feel refreshed. I feel more tired now than I did when I finished the last podcast.
Feel a bit fucked right now. But we've talked about we are shaking up a little bit in season two, which you'll learn over the next couple of episodes. But I found myself sort of missing the podcast and just lying in bed at night going, something dangerous.
I've got a pod to do. Oh, no, I don't. It's fine.
Yeah, just looking at random things of people getting hurt. And, you know, I sent you that story about the exploding lasagna. So I do. I've got a couple of wee pieces of dangerous news that I found this week. I found them interesting, and sometimes I think that we try and look for something to say, oh, we've got to do a big meaty episode on that. But what we've talked about is trying to find a couple of little snippets of things that are dangerous and sometimes funny, and maybe we can mention them on the show.
Something just a little teaser,
yeah,
for listeners to get their teeth into before the main event.
That's it.
Yeah. So something I did dangerous this week is I went to see Dune 2. Have you seen that yet?
No.
Is it June or Dune? So have you seen the first one?
No.
All right. Well, that's probably why you haven't seen it. It's brilliant. The first one's brilliant. The second one's even better. But the reason it was dangerous is because I went to go and see it in 4X. 4DX.
4DX? What's that?
Go on. So that's when the chairs kind of vibrate and move and things get sprayed in your face and smoke going off everywhere. So it's kind of like the 4D, I suppose, is the kind of like experience that,
right.
You know, it's not just the visuals you get the, but the problem is with a film like Dune, right. It's quite complicated. I think it is. Right. And you've kind of got to focus on what's happening because there's lots of different, it's quite political, I suppose, in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to focus on this film, basically watch it whilst being on a roller coaster, and it's just like I'm getting like shaken around and like things are being sprayed in my face, and I need to watch it again because I don't really know what happened.
It's like the 3D craze when it came out at the cinema, and there were films that were like filmed for it, like Avatar, which was mind-blowing 3D. But I went to see the last Harry Potter and I went to see it in 3D. And it just ruined it for me.
It's just like, you're just kind of like, oh, I need to see that properly. Like,
yeah, it was a bit blurry. I wear glasses anyway, so I could see the reflection on my glasses off the 3D glasses, and it was all just a bit shit, and I kind of regret doing that.
I know, I do, because I really enjoyed the film, the bits that I got. But then I know that I now have to go back and watch it again, which I would have done anyway, but because there's bits that I've missed because I was being... I was going through a bone rattling experience, quite literally. Yeah. So, I took a beer in with me as well. So, like, I had a can, and the can fits perfectly in like the kind of a drinks holder thing. So, I put my can in the drinks holder. I'm not on a detox anymore, by the way. I went to the toilet, came back, and my beer was flat. Because the chair is shaking all of this. Oh, man. Anyway, there we go. So yeah, that was fun. So as you say, we are going to do a different segment to start with of dangerous news. And I understand that you've got some interesting things that you've come across this week.
But the first one I'm going to talk about is it was a viral video that's been going around Facebook that really tickled me. And I don't know if you've seen it. There was a lady leaning against a shop window, and it was early in the morning, and the shopkeeper, obviously from inside the shop, decided to open his electric shutters.
Yeah, I did see this. I think she was she worked in the shop, I think, didn't she?
Oh, did she work in the shop?
Yeah, it made BBC News.
It did. God, that's dangerous. There's just this wonderful video of her getting hung 7 foot in the air by like the back of her knickers or something.
You get like full on wedgie, about 5 foot in the air. It was hilarious. Yeah,
but she was 71, so she wasn't a young lady.
No,
not that 71's that old nowadays, but.
But she was kind of face down, though. If her knickers ripped, she would have been planted into the ground.
See, it's good that she was 71, because she would have had them good, big, thick granny knickers on, you know. So.
Indestructible.
But she's famous now. So her name's now Super Anne.
Oh, yeah.
Super Anne. So that was one that tickled me, a wee bit of dangerous news. Another one, there was a runaway train in India that travelled 40 miles without a driver. And basically they pulled in at a station to swap the driving crew, and one crew got off, the other crew hadn't got on, but the first crew hadn't put the handbrake on. So the train basically fucked off down the lines. It was a 53 wagon goods train, so it's full of like heavy stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Thankfully it wasn't a passenger train. But it did reach speeds of 70 kilometers an hour.
Yeah. How does that even happen though? Like, did someone get on, turn it on, and then get off?
It was on a slope.
No one put the handbrake on.
That was it, yeah, and it just rolled off. but eventually, you know, it found a bit where it was going up a slope and sort of came to a halt. But yeah, imagine that. Okay, so another story. Again, these all happened this week. This is like current news.
Current news. You don't get anything better than this.
No, current. Yeah, current's the best news. In Florida, doctors had to remove 150 live bugs from a Florida man's nose. Ugh. So this man that's just down as an unidentified patient, I probably didn't want people to know about it, actually started getting funny pains in as far back as October last year.
All right.
This week he went to hospital with a really bad sort of burning sensation in his face, and when the doctors looked up his nose, it was full of maggots and bugs.
Oh. And
they first started to remove them using suction, a bit like the little thing the dentist uses.
Yeah.
But the deeper they went, they were actually all in his sinus cavities, and they were at the base of where your brain is, starting to eat their way through there.
Well, the question is, and I'm sure you're going to tell me, how did they get there?
Well, they don't actually know exactly.
Don't know. So there's loads of maggots in his head.
And, loads of maggots in his head.
Was he eating cheese by any chance?
He was, yeah. Casu matsu. He was snorting it. Yeah. The report I read just said it remains a mystery. It says the problem might have stemmed from his bad hygiene habits when handling dead fish.
So he's handling dead fish and picking his nose.
Yeah. So I assume he was a fisherman. He wasn't just some doing like pervy things with dead fish.
Well, you never know. Where was it again?
Just knocking about with a cod in his pocket. It was in Arizona. It was Florida.
Florida. You never know.
My mind's already on Arizona. Where an Arizona woman fell down a well, and she actually spent the night deep 15 foot down in the hole, which actually did have a ladder, but due to her injury, she couldn't climb the ladder. But she did have her mobile phone and actually stayed in the well overnight before calling for help because she didn't want to disturb anyone because it was during the night.
Oh, she sounds nice.
So she phoned people and they came and rescued her.
Oh, what a nice, nice person.
I know, yeah.
Strange, but nice.
A bit strange, yeah. you know, because you'd be, I mean, imagine how pissed off you'd be if someone disturbed you to go and rescue them out of a well with like broken legs.
Yeah, I'm in a well. Try me in the morning.
So that was this week's kind of wee dangerous news stories that I found. And to me, you know, I come across these things all the time, and I do actually share them on our Facebook page, little daft dangerous things. There was the woman with the exploding lasagna. Mm-hmm. But in all honesty, it wasn't really that interesting. No. It was a woman went into a restaurant. They'd clearly microwaved the lasagna, and as you know, you stick a fork in it, and sometimes it can be scalding hot in the middle and squirts up in your face. And
yeah, it's a bit Alan Partridge, that, isn't it, with the apple pie?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So what's the Facebook page again?
So the Facebook page, we've actually set up a new one. We still have the Most Dangerous Podcast, which is our Facebook page, where you'll get all the news and updates and everything. But this week, James, I created a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind the Facebook group is you can become a member of the Facebook group, and you too can actually post in our Facebook group. And
do we charge for this? I think we should start charging people for this privilege.
No, it's free at first until they get addicted to it, and then we start charging.
Right, okay, yeah, get the addiction done first. Right.
That's it.
What was that called again, the group?
So it's the Most Dangerous Podcast, but it comes under groups as opposed to pages.
Right.
Same logo, same icon. And if you join, what I'm hoping is that, you know, we can post things and other people can post dangerous things for us to look at, and we'll interact with you and we'll comment on it. And you never know, if it's interesting enough, we might do a podcast about it.
Yeah, all the good stuff. So there it is. So pop over to the Facebook page. There's more socials coming soon, I believe. Yeah. We've got a plan for that. So yeah, so pop over to the Facebook page, interact, mm-hmm. give us a shout, say hello. Bye. We'd love to hear from you.
So as we said, this is season two, so we're trying to take things a little bit more seriously. We're ramping it up a bit, so we just need some followers now.
Yeah, just need some people to actually listen to the thing.
Aye.
Right.
So, James, so you've got an interesting story for us.
I do, yeah, I do today. We're going to have to use our imagination a little bit on this one, I think.
Yeah, I did look this up. It's a bit weird.
It is a bit weird. So we're going to look at, so rather than doing what we were doing before, was kind of looking at the most dangerous subjects and things. Well, I've kind of this week decided to go down a bit of a different route and look at something. Well, we don't know what it is actually. So I'll get started, shall I?
Yeah, go for it. Excited.
Right then, Fraser. So once you use your imagination. Mm-hmm. Put yourself back to the 1800s.
I mean, I don't remember it, but I'll try.
That's right. You've seen films. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. 1800s. Okay.
So in October 1837, mm-hmm. Mary Stevenson was walking home across Clapham Common when an unusual figure leapt out, grabbed her and kissed her face before tearing her clothes with claws she described at the time as cold and clammy as those of a corpse. Alerted by screams, passers-by disrupted the attacker, causing him to flee. Although described as perfectly sensible and not likely to suffer from hallucinations, Mary found that her story was disregarded, as were similar attacks nearby on Barnes Common. Okay. The following day brought another encounter. A cloaked man jumped in front of a horse and carriage, causing serious injury to the driver. The thing then casually leapt over a 9-foot wall whilst emitting a high-pitched cackle, which witnesses agreed at the time was unusual. And these, Fraser, were the first known reports of the legend that is known to become Spring-Heeled Jack.
I'm glad you said Spring-Heeled Jack, because the way you said he casually jumped over a 9-foot wall.
Yeah. So what we're going to talk about today is mm-hmm. a dangerous ghost, a dangerous mm-hmm. cryptid, a dangerous person. We don't really know what this guy is,
right?
But as we'll go through the story, it's kind of a bit of a creepy one, this one, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Now, when you say a cryptid, that, like, I mean, it sounds like people have actually seen it, as opposed to, you know, if it's actually done stuff.
Yeah. So, like, you know, cryptids are kind of like unknown, like, you know, like a yeti or Loch Ness. So people call those cryptids. So like animals mm-hmm. potentially that aren't of this world or something like that, you know, stuff like that. So potentially it's that, potentially it's just a bloke, potentially it's a ghost. Nobody really knows it, but yeah, we'll go through it and we'll see.
Okay.
And we'll have a look ourselves and see what we think. So just to give, thank you. So just to give it some context. So in the early 19th century, there were a lot of reports of ghosts that stalked the streets of London and other cities in the UK. They were reported as human-like figures, described as pale. It was believed that they stalked and preyed on lone pedestrians. There's a lot of them about. Perhaps an important one of these, one of the most important ones, was a ghost called the Hammersmith Ghost. This was reported in 1803 and 1804. And again, it was reported in Hammersmith, which is on the western fringes of London. And it would later appear in 1824 as well. So a few reports of this Hammersmith ghost going around. Another apparition at the time was one called the Southampton Ghost. And this was reported to assault individuals in the night. So there's a bit of a sort of background to these things. It's not really understood why, like, the times were different then, obviously, you know. Perhaps it was a way of keeping people off the streets late at night, you know, stop people congregating, or don't stand there, the ghosts come in, or whatever, you know, or, you know, stuff like that. But,
yeah,
people didn't really, the science wasn't there, really, if you like.
But we've talked about this before, how, like, your mind can imagine things. And I because we were talking about it recently, I watched Alien the other night, and I did that thing where I was switching all the lights off and I was halfway up the stairs, and you sort of have a little, you go up a little bit quicker than normal because you get a little bit frightened, you know?
Behind you, or, yeah.
And obviously in like 1800s, 1830, the street lighting and stuff wouldn't have been the same. So you imagine, you know, we walk about at night and it's all lit up with street lighting and stuff. It must have been a lot spookier back then. So you probably do, like, imagine things, or you might just
see fearful, you know. You've seen the old sort of, like, yeah, they do these recreations in the films and stuff. It's all kind of smoky and mysterious, and it was oil lamps, wasn't it, rather than electric lamps and stuff. So it's dimly lit and things like that. So
it's a flickering light as well. It's not like a
white
LED. It's like a flickering orange light, and it could just be a guy walking down an alley. I mean, there must have been creepy bastards back then, so. You know, just a creepy guy or a loony walking down an alley and someone goes, "Oh, fuck, that's a ghost."
Yeah, well, I've got a good example of that. I'm going to go off on a bit of a tangent before we go back to Springheel Jack, because I did, when I was researching this, I did look into the Hammersmith Ghost and thought it is quite interesting. So I'm going to do a bit of a lore lesson for you.
Hammersmith Ghost, I'm sure that features in Bottom. I'm sure they talk about it.
Yeah, it might be something different in Bottom, though. So I'll just talk about this just briefly, because it is quite interesting. Anyone listening can skip through it if you want. Or we can cut it out or whatever. It's a law lesson for everybody. So from November 1803, a number of people in Hammersmith started to claim that they'd seen or been attacked by ghosts. The local people said that this ghost was of a man who died by suicide the previous year, and he'd been buried in Hammersmith churchyard. So the contemporary belief at the time was that suicide victims should not be buried in consecrated ground because their souls would not rest. It's a religious belief. I think some weirdos still think that now, but whatever. The apparition was described as being very tall and dressed all in white.
Okay.
So the stories about the ghost soon began to circulate. Two women, one elderly and the other pregnant, were reported to have been seized by the ghost on separate occasions while walking near the churchyard. And they were apparently so frightened, they both died of shock within a few days afterwards.
Can that happen?
Die of shock?
Yeah,
I think so, yeah. I think you can die of shock. I think back in those days, death was defined differently. I don't think we'd define it as shock these days. It'd be like heart attack or something that. But whereas those days, it'd be like, oh, he died of shock, but not really knowing that it was a heart attack.
Yeah, it probably caused a stroke or something.
Stuff like that. Yeah. So when I say died of shock, that was probably the interpretation at the time, whereas it was probably something else.
Do you remember when you were a kid, everyone's grandparents died of old age?
Yeah, exactly.
Then you grow up and realize that no one dies of old age.
Well, some people do, actually. Yeah,
I think my great granny actually died of old age. She was 101.
So in my line of work, I do deal with a lot of people, well, a lot of deaths. As I mentioned before, I do like legal work and estate administration and stuff like that. So sometimes you see death certificates where it does say old age.
Really?
Some people are just like 105 years old, and it's just like frailty and old age and stuff. So
body knackered.
Yeah, fair enough. So at the time, a brewer's servant called Thomas Groom, he later testified that while walking through the churchyard in Hammersmith with a companion one night, close to 9 p.m, something rose up behind from a tombstone and seized him by the throat.
Bloody hell.
So later on in the year, on the 29th of December, William Girdler, a night watchman, saw the ghost while near Beaver Lane and gave it a chase. The apparition, the apparition then threw off its shroud and managed to escape, as all ghosts do.
Did he get the shroud?
I'm not sure. He might have done. But the story does go on. So with London not having an organised police force at the time, the Met was actually formed in 1829. So there's a little fact for you. When was this again? 1803. Yeah, so it didn't have like an organized police like it does now.
Right, okay, yeah.
And many people were frightened at the time. According to Girdler, several citizens formed armed patrols in the hope of apprehending the ghost. So people with guns and pitchforks just walking around looking for a ghost that can throw off its shroud.
Bloody hell.
So on the 3rd of January, 1804, at the corner of Beaver Lane, while making his rounds at around about 10:30, Girdler met one of these armed citizens patrolling the area, a 29-year-old Francis Smith. He was armed with a shotgun, and Smith told Girdler that he was going to look for the supposed ghost.
Right.
Just after 11 p.m, Smith encountered Thomas Millwood. He was a bricklayer, and he was wearing his normal white clothing of his trade, so linen trousers, entirely white, washed very clean, and a waistcoat of flannel, apparently new and very white as well, and an apron, which he wore around him. This chap, Thomas Millwood, the bricklayer, he'd been heading home from a visit to his parents and sister, who lived on Black Lion Lane. According to the bricklayer's sister, Anne Millwood, immediately after seeing her brother off, she heard Smith, so the chap with the gun, challenging him, saying, "Damn you! Who are you? And what are you? Damn you! I'll shoot you!" After which Smith shot him in the lower left of the jaw and killed him because he thought it was the ghost, because he just had his bricklayer stuff on.
Right. He realised it wasn't a ghost when the bullet didn't go straight through.
And his head exploded.
Yeah. Why was a bricklayer dressed like a baker?
I don't know. It must be what they wore back in those days.
Yeah, true.
So because of this, Francis Smith was then tried for murder and ultimately found guilty. And after passing the custodial sentence of death, the judge said that he intended to report the case to the king, who had the power to commute the sentence. And the initial sentence of hanging and dissection was commuted to a year's worth of hard labour.
So you got hard labour for a year instead of hanging and dissection?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a downgrade, really, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So this is where the legal question comes in. So the question that was being asked at the time is, should an individual be held liable for their actions, even if they were the consequence of a mistaken belief?
Well, I know you're going to tell me the actual answer to that, but I think he should be held liable for his actions, because I mean, surely he just shot without finding, without saying, having a chat with the guy or anything. It's not like the guy was coming at him trying to attack him.
But he believed that this was a ghost, right? Yeah. I know how mad that sounds, but he thought this was a ghost. His main aim was to go and shoot this ghost, and it had been agreed by this group of people, bearing in mind there's no police. There must be some law enforcement somewhere, but that was the main aim. He's come across the ghost, or what he thinks is the ghost, and gone, "Oh my god, you're the ghost! You've been terrorizing these people around Hammersmith."
Yeah,
bang,
shoot on sight, sort of thing.
Yeah. So it's it is a difficult legal question.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, you'd have to, I mean, they must be aware that there are other people walking about wearing white, you know?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Yeah. But it's
I just think that there's just that split second of actually going, excuse me, are you the ghost? Or are you a bricklayer? Or I mean, if you've got a gun and the other guy hasn't, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Are you a ghost?
Yeah. I just think to shoot on sight isn't checking that you've got the right target, really, is it?
Yeah. So I'm not surprised that you and me are both struggling with the answer to this, because this legal question was wrangled through the courts for the best part of 150 years until it was clarified in a Court of Appeal case, R versus Williams, in 1984. Did I say that? By the way, do you know what the R stands for in R against Williams?
No.
So R it means the crown.
Right.
It's a Latin name for the crown. So it's either, if it's king, it's Rex. If it's queen, it's Regina. So when it's R versus whatever, it's the crown against that person. Yeah.
So it says Regina on a pound coin.
Yes, that's right. Yes, it means queen. And then eventually, I think over the next coming years, it'll say Rex at some point. So there you go. Every day's a school day for you.
Yeah, yeah.
So this case in 1984. So Gladstone Williams, he'd seen a man dragging a younger man violently along the street while the latter shouted for help. So the guy on the floor was going, oh, you know what I mean? So mistakenly believing that this is an assault taking place, Mr. Williams intervened and injured the apparent assailant, so the guy doing the dragging, who, at the time, was actually attempting to apprehend the suspect thief.
Right.
So the thief's on the floor, the guy's dragging him along the street. Mr. Williams, seeing it happening, runs over and just batters the guy that's doing the dragging.
Fucking hell. Right.
So it's a similar sort of thing, isn't it? So Mr. Williams doesn't know what's going on there. He just thinks, someone's being assaulted. I need to step in. I need to do the right thing.
Yeah.
So the judge in this case said, it's fair. Like, let me just read it out. It would appear that such a defendant would be entitled to be judged on the fact as he honestly believed them to be, and hence would be permitted to use a degree of force that was reasonable in the context of what he perceived to be happening.
Right.
So essentially, what that means is you can do it if you think something's happening, as long as you act reasonably. You know, if he would walked over, shot the guy and cut his limbs off, then that's a bit excessive. But if you just thumped the guy and said, what are you doing, what's going on, then he wouldn't be found guilty.
So do enough to stop the situation, basically.
Yeah, if you think something's going on, if you do enough to stop it, but without going further than you need to, then that's okay. So there was a couple of cases after the 1984 case, and this legal concept was actually enshrined in law in the Criminal Justice and Immigration Act in 2008. So this case, going back to the Hammersmith ghost, leading all the way up to 2008, was finally enshrined in law.
What the hell?
So that's interesting, isn't it?
And no one from that time knows anything about it.
But it's just, I thought that was quite interesting, because something that's just this legal question that's been going on for years and years and years, it took...
Yeah, it's been rattled back and forward.
Yeah, so that's over 200 years until somebody finally went, actually, just be reasonable. That's
mental,
the thing with, like,
it?
Yeah, with law, like, when I was doing it, like, the whole everything just seems to be, well, as long as you're being reasonable, you're all right. Yeah. You know, just don't be excessive.
But that makes sense, though, doesn't it? You know, it is all about being reasonable. Like you said, I thought he was hurting that guy, so I stopped him hurting that guy. It's different to, I thought he was hurting that guy, so I kicked seven shades of shite out of him. You know?
I destroyed
him.
Yeah, I broke both his arms because he was dragging a kid across the street. And it's, but I think, like, the interesting thing is that this concept of reasonableness didn't exist as kind of a legal concept back in 1804 or whatever it was, you know.
Right. So it was just more black and white.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah.
So anyway, let's like I say, this
always amazes me. Always amazes me, just quickly, you know, like these people that see something going on and run over and try and stop it. And I wouldn't consider myself like a, you know, like a wimp or anything. I will stand up for people, but I'm also not that guy that, you know, if I saw someone running out in front of a bus, I'm not running out to get them.
You know? Yeah, I think like times have changed a lot. And I think like this day and age, there's a lot of kind of, well, there's a lot of knife crime around at the moment.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like I was in the co-op the other day. Some guy just walked straight in, picked up two bottles of rum, and then just walked straight back out again.
I've seen that. Yeah. Case of beer.
Like not even like looking around or anything, just beeline to the booze and beeline straight back out. Like there was, I don't think there was a security guard on at the time. There usually is, but I think he must have picked that day because there wasn't. Yeah. And all the staff were like, well, I'm not risking my life for co-op's rum. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
it, yeah.
What that guy could have anything on him. Like, he could have a knife. He could even have potentially a gun, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, what's the point? So, yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, what's the point? It sounds really bad, but I think that's the way, like, society is kind of in a bit of a shitty place because of that at the moment. Mm-hmm. Everyone's a bit
Someone stops me. Yeah, someone stops me and says, give me your wallet. Fucking, there you go. I want to go home to my kids tonight.
Yeah, it's your stuff. Give me your watch. You know? Yeah, have it. It's your stuff.
Or, you know, like during the war, you know, when like in a film, a grenade would land and someone would dive on the grenade.
Mm.
I'd be the one going, come on, Billy, time to be here.
Push them on it.
Yeah, jump on it, Billy. We'll tell your parents you were a fucking hero. You know. Anyway.
So, no,
that is interesting. It always amazes me. You see, like, legal cases and stuff, and it's always based on, well, it's a precedent, isn't it? It's like, you know, that's gone before. And you do see, like, you know, you talk about a case and it refers back to one from, like, 1972 where, it set the standard.
That's it.
But it's amazing to think that one's actually from something at, like, 1803 or 1804.
And it's been, been going on for 200 years, and finally some judge has gone, do you know what, just be sound about it. Just don't take
I think of like the 82-year-old, you know, lawyer or barrister having to hand it down. You know, I've been working on this for 60 years. It's your turn now.
Still can't figure it out.
Crack on with it. Yeah, you crack on with it. But no, that was interesting. Thanks, James.
Yeah, well, that's completely off tangent. I just thought that was quite quite interesting, which I came across. Right then, sorry about that. That was a bit of a rant. Back to the main event.
Okay.
So following the first account, several other young women started to report similar sightings throughout suburban London.
Mm-hmm.
According to earlier reports, the attacker was described as a shape-shifting figure, ghostly in appearance, and with gloves in the shape of claws.
Wow.
So rumours of this strange figure swirled around London for about a year, with the press eventually giving him the nickname Spring-Heeled Jack.
Right.
By 1837, the story was not to be thought. Was not thought to be anything more than exaggerated gossip or ghost stories until an encounter the following year. So perhaps the best known alleged incidents involving Spring-Heeled Jack were the attacks on two teenage girls, Lucy Scales and Jane Allsop.
Okay.
The Allsop report was widely covered by newspapers, including a piece in the Times. And the press coverage of these two attacks helped to raise the profile of Spring-Heeled Jack. So we'll go through these two cases because these are the main ones, really. So from this point, I'll go through the Allsop case and the Scales case. But from this point, particularly the Allsop case, it got covered greatly by the press, you know. Mm-hmm. And from this point, it kind of escalated this mystical character, this whatever it is, to sort of cult status, if you like.
It's interesting you said gloves with claws. That sounds more real than if someone said, oh, we had long claws.
Yeah.
So it does sound like almost like a superhero nowadays or a supervillain that is just a guy in a costume.
Funny you should mention that. I think we'll go through the cases. I think the best thing to do is go through the cases and go through the sort of background of it all, and then we could do the analysis sort of later in the show, and then we can kind of sort of conclude whether we think it's a ghost or a whatever.
Yeah. Okay, go for it.
All right. So Jane Allsop reported that on the night of 19th of February 1838, she answered the door of her father's house to a man claiming to be a police officer. He told her to bring a light, claiming that they'd just caught Spring-Heeled Jack in the lane. So she brought the person a candle and noticed he wore a large cloak. The moment that she handed him the candle, however, he threw off the cloak, and this is a quote, he threw off the cloak and presented a most hideous and frightful appearance. He was, and this isn't a quote, he vomited blue and white flames from his mouth, and his eyes resembled red balls of fire. Miss Allsop reported that he wore a large helmet and that his clothing, which appeared to be very tight-fitting, resembled white oilskin.
White oilskin.
Mm.
Right.
Without saying a word, he caught hold of her and began tearing at her gown with his claws. And she said she was certain it was made. The claws were made of some metallic substance. She screamed for help and managed to get away from him and ran towards the house. He caught her on the steps of the house and tore at her neck and her arms with his claws. She was rescued by one of her sisters and dragged into the house. They called the authorities, and all the time they were waiting for the police to arrive, Jack continued to bang on the door, and he only fled when the police arrived.
Right, so obviously the sister saw this as well.
Well, she heard the noises, heard the screams, ran out, dragged him, dragged the sister away into the house, and then he was just there banging on the door. That's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
And again, this sort of breathing white flames and having red eyes is a common theme throughout the sightings of Spring-Heeled Jack.
Did she have cuts and gashes? Well, she had one gash.
I was going to say that. I guess so. I don't know. I mean, this is a long time ago, so police reporting perhaps wasn't as good as it is now. But I guess if he's sort of scratching her with metallic nails and stuff on her arms, I guess. A dress, a gown was all ripped and stuff.
Right, okay, yeah. No, that's fine. Looking for evidence.
That's what we're all about.
Yep.
So, Lucy Scales. So this was on the 28th of February, 1938. Oh, sorry, 1838 even. So 9 days after the attack on Miss Allsop. So 18-year-old Lucy Scales and her sister were returning home after visiting their brother. He was a butcher who lived in the respectable part of Limehouse, that's in London. Miss Scales stated to the police that she and her sister were passing along Green Dragon Alley. They observed a person standing in the angle of the passage. She was walking in front of her sister at the time, and just as she came up upon the person, who was wearing a large cloak, he splurted a quantity of blue flame in her face. This deprived her of her sight and also alarmed her, naturally. And then she instantly dropped to the ground. She was then seized by the character who began scratching at her, just like this all stopped. Her brother added to the police that on that evening in question, he had heard the loud screams of one of his sisters moments after they had left the house, and on running up Green Dragon Alley, he found his sister Lucy on the ground in a fit, with her sister trying to hold her for support. She was taken home. He then learned from the other sister what had happened. The sister described Lucy's assailant as being tall, thin, with a gentlemanly appearance, covered in a large cloak, carrying a small lamp or a bull's eyes lantern, similar to those used by the police at the time. The individual did not speak, but instead walked quickly away after he'd finished the attack. Every effort was made by the police to discover the person who carried out these, and several persons were questioned, but they never did find the person or the perpetrator.
Bloody hell. But each attack, he's just scratched people.
Yeah, he's just gone. It's just a bit weird, isn't it? Like, he's just kind of... It's almost like a power play, or like, you know, he's not... I mean, I'll go into it in a bit more detail about what I think and the reporting around the time. But from the stories that have been told, it just seems like a bit of a... Maybe it's a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
Or just a kind of bit of a weirdo who just kind of likes frightening women for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really see the attraction, but, you know.
No. That's the...
It's a bit like, have you seen the film Kick-Ass, where he just decides I'm going to dress up and be a superhero?
Yeah, it's a bit like that, isn't it? Yeah.
Goes out and gets leathered.
Yeah.
As if he's thought, you know, I'm going to fucking put a cloak on and some, like, claw gloves and stuff. And...
Claw gloves. And I think it was interesting about the mask and the fit in the Allsop case. So I'm kind of sort of leaning towards this not being a dangerous ghost, more of a dangerous person.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, so dangerous in the way he'll scratch you.
Yeah, well, dangerous because it's absolutely fucking terrifying. Like, imagine just walking down the street and just some guy jumps out with, like, glowing red eyes, breathing blue fire. I mean,
yeah, see, the blue fire is the one that I'm struggling with. I mean, glowing red eyes, you know.
That can be... So I did see when... I didn't put it in this, but I did see when I was researching this that there was a contraption that you could make, and it's basically like kind of a pipe, and you put kind of sulfur in it with some other chemical.
Right, okay.
And if you sort of like blow, it does create this kind of like blue flame effect.
Okay, fair enough.
So, I mean, I didn't go... Because it was dead science-y, and it had like a diagram of how to make it and stuff. I was like, I might give that a go. Bring back
start
Jack.
Getting like a knock at your door when you start looking at things like that.
Yeah, so it was possible. The technology was available. The one thing that gets me a little bit is the jumping thing. So I don't understand how he managed to do that. Because I don't think the technology to jump 9 foot is even available today, to be honest. Apart from like a pogo stick. But
yeah, even you've got them like the, you know, the fellas that haven't got any legs that run in the Olympics. Them kind of paddle things.
I don't think so. Like, I don't think it sounds like there was some sort of mechanism in his boots, even if it even happened. Like, you just don't know, do you?
No.
So anyway,
but again, like, people, things get skewed when people are frightened, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah.
I remember the first time my dog had a seizure. It felt to me like it lasted about 20 minutes, but it was about 30 seconds. Because you're panicking, you know, and so he probably jumped over like a 3 foot wall. But, you know.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, because it became a bit such a legend, it's like, oh, yeah, I've seen him. I've seen him jump like 9 foot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just hopped over a fence or something.
All right.
So, anyway, so following the accounts of Jane Allsop and Lucy Scales, spring-heeled Jack sightings were started to be reported all around of England. Even reaching parts of Scotland. His victims were most commonly described as young women. They all described similar accounts of this mysterious man, you know, in thin, tight-fitting clothes, red eyes, claws for hands.
Right. These are people, obviously there was no social media, so these are people that, you know, similar story, but wouldn't have spoken to the other victims.
Yeah, it's all word of mouth. It's like they read something in the paper and then they're kind of like, oh, yeah. Once you've got it in your mind, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's like one of those. So as the rumours spread, the story of Spring-Heeled Jack started to take a life of its own. It became a bit of a cult thing. So there was loads of plays written about it. Some people wrote books or novels about it. There was something called Penny Dreadfuls. Have you heard of these before?
Penny Dreadful. There was a show.
Back in the day, it was a little comic book with it would like have cartoons in it about sort of current affairs, if you like. You know, like they kind of do it in newspapers with political pictures.
Newspaper cartoons.
Yeah, so it'd be stuff like that, but it'd be kind of like what's going on in the world. We'll do a little cartoon about it. So those would feature Spring-Heeled Jack. All throughout the second half of the 19th century. So this kind of sort of cemented his status as an urban legend.
Wow.
So as time went on, then reports of Springhill Jack, they grew even more bizarre. So again, it was probably fueled by this sort of popular fiction.
Yeah.
Then people were giving him even more superhuman traits. You know, mm-hmm. they say, oh, he could actually jump over buildings, you know, rooftop to rooftop, you know, things like that.
Yeah, things grow legs, don't they? These.
Yeah, just as like snowballs, like the snowball mm-hmm. effect, I suppose. So we'll just move on to like later sightings. So those were the two main sightings that I've come across. Mm-hmm. Those were the ones that kind of sort of, as I say, snowballed this kind of urban legend into the sort of mainstream. Mm-hmm. So a bit later on in the 1800s, so in the beginning of the 1870s, Springhill Jack was reported again in several places quite distant from each other. Mm-hmm. In November 1872, the News of the World reported that Peckham was in a state of commotion owing to what is known as the Peckham Ghost.
Right.
As a mysterious figure who was quite alarming in appearance, was doing the rounds. And the editorial of the newspaper pointed out that it was none other than Springhill Jack who terrified a past generation.
Mm-hmm.
Similar stories were then published in the Illustrated Police News. I don't know what that is. Illustrated Police News. Sounds interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, police news with like little drawings of what happened.
And stuff, yeah. Yeah, like Charlie, like Mr. Plod.
chasing the Hamburglar.
So in April and May of 1873, mm-hmm. it was reported that numerous sightings in Sheffield. They named this one the Park Ghost.
Right.
And some locals also came to identify this as Springhill Jack.
Were they still talking about things like the blue flames and stuff?
So this is the common trait. So, right. Yeah, blue flames, red eye, red glowing eyes and sharp mm-hmm. Freddy Krueger claws. So this news was followed by more reported sightings mm-hmm. until August 1877. This is one of the more notable reports about Springhill Jack. Mm-hmm. And it comes from a group of soldiers in Aldershot Garrison. So this goes as a sentry on duty at the North Camp peered into the darkness, his attention attracted by a peculiar figure advancing towards him. The soldier issued a challenge.
Like, oi, who goes there?
Which went unheeded. And then the figure came up beside him, delivered several slaps to his face. bit slapped him. And then another guard shot him. Not the soldier, the Springhill
Jack.
Yeah. And apparently had no visible effect.
Yeah. Maybe he was just trying to give him a can of tango.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was tango, wasn't it? Yeah. The kid's going deaf because they're getting slapped around the head.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wallop. Fucking blood shooting out your nose.
So someone's shot this Springhill Jack and nothing happened. But
nothing happened.
Some sources claim that the soldier may have fired blanks,
mm-hmm.
Or it might have been a warning shot. Who knows? Then the strange figure then disappeared into the shrouding darkness with, quote, astonishing bounds. That's pretty cool. So what was that? That was 1877. Again, in 1877, Springhill Jack was reportedly seen at Newport Arch in Lincoln. Wearing,
he gets about, doesn't he?
He does a bit, yeah. This time he's wearing a sheepskin. I don't know, it's like John Motson. Like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like a Del Boy sheepskin coat, or was he like sure that blood that. Dripping, like freshly ripped off sheepskin? You know,
yeah, it doesn't say, but I think it's more the latter than the John Motson style.
Yeah,
I don't think they were around in 1877.
Like the rug your granny used to have.
I think
like
so.
Like a run over sheep on the floor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is 1877 in Lincoln. An angry mob supposedly chased him and cornered him. And again, he was shot then. He was shot a lot. And as usual, it appeared to make no effects. And he made his leaping abilities, or used his leaping abilities to lose the crowd. So jumping over fences and stuff like that.
But he must be a fair age by this point.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same person. Yeah. I'm getting this
either. 87-year-old man fucking leaping over buildings and stuff.
He's just got like, just like that Wallace and Gromit, you know, he's got the wrong trousers on. He's just got his boots that he can't take off and then he's just springing around everywhere.
Incidentally, when I was looking at Dangerous News, I watched this. It was a 90-year-old man who was going to be the oldest man to compete in this bike race. Right at the start line, he fell straight off his bike. the first pedal, he went. It was going down a little ramp, but he went off the side of the ramp.
Oh, Joe, would have been better. Do you know when you were a kid and you'd get on your bike and the pedals would spin backwards and smash you in the shin?
Oh, yeah.
It'd be better if that happened and then he just kind of tanked it sideways.
Trying to think of better ways for the 90-year-old to get hurt.
I did see one where like a 90-odd-year-old guy did like a 100-meter race and like everyone just bombed past him, but he did finish it. Fair play to him.
I saw a thing on Facebook. Like it says, if I faced a shark in a triathlon, he would beat me at swimming and I would beat him at running. So it all comes down to who's the best cyclist.
Oh, yeah, but like you'd have to do, well, you wouldn't finish the swimming there, would you? Because the shark would have you.
True, yeah.
So you wouldn't get past the first event.
Sorry, Spring Heel Jack, go on.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, moving on. So we're not far off now, sorry. So by the end of the 19th century, the reports of Spring Heel Jack were moving towards the northwest of England. And around 1888 in Everton, North Liverpool, he allegedly appeared on the rooftops of St. Francis Xavier's Church and on Salisbury Street. And in 1904, so this is the last known sighting of him.
Right.
In 1904, there were reports of appearances in William Henry Street in Everton. So that's apparently the last. Now, I did see... there was a reported sighting in Sheffield in 1977, but I'm not having that. That was just some lunatic, I think.
So
not,
1977. So like
I'm not buying that. Yeah, so this, I mean, even
Sheffield.
That was in Sheffield. Yeah. But I mean,
you ever seen the people walking about Sheffield?
No, I saw like this photo, and it was like some guy jumping off a rooftop. But
oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not having that. Yeah, but even 1904, what's that? That's nearly 60, 70 years, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Long time.
So 1904, there's not been much sort of after that, really. So, and just briefly as well, so while the attacks, you know, we did touch briefly about what he does, and he kind of just grabs people and
scratches him
and stuff like that. There is an unverified report of Spring Heel Jack being a killer.
Okay.
Apparently, he attacked a lady called Maria Davis in 1845. This attack was apparently in broad daylight. He spat blue flames into her face and then threw her off a bridge.
Right.
But there's no actual existing records or death certificates to confirm this. So it possibly sort of fake news to kind of scare women, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to think about the time as well. I think a lot of this might be that women were different, viewed differently then, weren't they? They were expected to sort of be proper and stay at home or whatever and look after, particularly in certain circles. So if there's a rumour going around that like there's a weirdo on the streets, it gives perhaps men more of a reason to go, don't go out, stay at home. You know, so I don't know. I think that might be some of it, some part of it.
Some man would encourage them to go out.
So why are you out tonight, love? Yeah. So you have a walk around the block on your own. Right. So that's Spring Heel Jack. But I suppose the question is, what is it? Who is it?
Well, are you asking me? You're asking me my opinion. Well,
yeah, give us an opinion. So is it a dangerous demon from another world? A time traveler or just a dangerous man who's got some weird kink.
My honest opinion is, before I decide who or what it is, I don't know what the point in it is, because it just scratches people. Now, like, I think we've discussed this before, like, usually someone kills someone, there's a motive, be it sexual or power hungry or something like that, or revenge. It's not actually doing anything that you would get anything out of it, you know?
Yes, so this is an interesting point, actually, about the sexual thing, because newspapers at the time, they're not like today where they say, oh, a woman was raped or this happened or that happened.
Right.
It's very much more kind of like, oh, she was kind of, they wouldn't even say she was touched up or anything. They'd just keep it kind of sort of quiet.
Yeah.
So there's kind of a bit of a theory about who Springfield Jack was, and following the kind of hysteria that was going around at the time about it, it was suggested that some of the reports of the sightings were made by women because they'd perhaps be attacked or sexually assaulted by men who they knew.
Right.
And rather than get them into trouble, or, you know, because of the status of men and women at the time, rather than go, oh, my husband's brother assaulted me, they did just go, I've got bruises on me because Springfield Jack attacked me. Or,
right, okay.
You know, so they'd use it as a kind of excuse, which is terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
They'd use it as an excuse to kind of like say, well, I have been assaulted, but it was just this weird demon thing that's going around London.
Oh, Jack getting the blame.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's one theory as to why there were so many sightings. But like I say, it was potentially sexual, but it's just difficult to tell because of the way that the reporting was back then.
Yeah,
it's difficult to say. So, yeah, why did he do it? Nobody knows, really. I mean, I suppose that goes on to who was he? I'll tell you right now, he was never caught or identified. So no one knows what or who this is. Mm-hmm.
You say about the demon thing. Now, have you seen the follow-up to The Shining, Dr. Sleep?
I've seen it a long time ago, like 10 years
and there's
ago.
A horrific scene where they murder a little boy because his screams and his anguish feed them. Now that's the only thing that I think of a demon type figure was basically torturing women because it got some kick out of their anguish and their screams and stuff.
Yeah,
no intention sick, of actually killing them or doing anything. It's more about, be it a human. Or, I mean, I don't believe in demons. I don't know what I'm talking about. But like, maybe it is someone that is just a power trip. Someone that basically, you know, he does this to terrify the women. He doesn't want to kill them, but he terrifies them to get a kick out of it. And then he runs off and has one off the wrist somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, it's just like, some weirdo just gets a kick out of scaring women. Like, potentially.
Almost like the murder fantasy, but is too afraid to actually kill someone.
Just wants
that power, that trip, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is, like I say, he's never identified or caught, but there's perhaps a clue who to Jack was. And this was reported in the Morning Herald in February 1838. This happened. So a young servant boy. He seemed to attack sort of people who are upper echelons of society, if you like.
Right. Yeah.
So he knocked on this sort of well-to-do house, and this young servant boy answered the door, and he found an individual standing there with a hideous appearance, a claw hand, and with clothing embroidered with a family crest in the shape of a W.
Right.
So many people, because of this, it's led to many people suspect this Springfield Jack character was in fact an Irish nobleman, or nobleman even, the Marquess of Waterford, a chap called Henry Beresford. So this Henry Beresford, he's a well-to-do fella, a nobleman, as I say, and he was frequently in the news in the late 1830s. He had loads of money. You know, he didn't give a shit. I think his dad died when he was young. His brother died. So everything, he inherited everything by the time he was like 15.
Right.
He was in the news loads in the 1830s for being arrested for drunk and brawling, brutal jokes, vandalism, starting a riot, things like that. You know, so he was just kind of one of these rich folks who just didn't give a shit. It was just reported. It was reported he'd just do anything for a bet.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, oh, I'll give you 20 quid for a fight. You know, stuff like that. He was just off his head.
Mm-hmm.
He was reported to have sort of contempt for women. Didn't really treat them very well. And it's thought that he did this, but not all of them, but certainly like the earlier ones. Perhaps the is it Jane Allsop that we spoke about? Perhaps he did it as a bet. Or as a bit of a laugh, because because he could. And, you know, he could perhaps afford all the attire, you know, the mask and this contraption that breathes fire and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I think a lot of people, whilst reading into this, I think a lot of people sort of lean towards this Henry Beresford being the person who started this kind of trend or this sort of myth or urban myth. So there were several suspects who were arrested, like Charles Grinfield and James Painter. They were said to be imitating Spring-Heeled Jack and just frightening women for no reason because they're dicks. But as I say, no one was actually ever charged. Most likely, I think, is there was one chap who started it, perhaps this Henry Beresford, and then there were just loads of copycats.
It's a bit like a Spartacus thing.
Yeah, as it became more and more popular, it came into the mainstream and there were plays about it and comics and stuff about it. People thought, I'll do that. That's funny, isn't it? But as you say, no one really knows why.
Well, I suppose, like, if you decide you want to go and fuck up some women, chase them about and scratch them and stuff, if you dress up as this guy, then it maybe gets you a little bit more out of it. If you just go up dressed to yourself, people say he did it. Like, you know, you could dress up as Spring-Heeled Jack, go and attack a couple of women and say, but it's not me because it was Spring-Heeled Jack and I've never been to London.
So it's hard to get into the mindset of the time. I think it's difficult to kind of go, well, this was nearly 200 years ago. In some cases it was, and it's kind of like, what was society like then? Like, it's only what you can read, I suppose. But to actually kind of be there was, I imagine, incredibly different. It's a funny one. So I'm going to come on to a conclusion now.
Okay.
So that's me. I'm out of breath and I'm losing my voice because that was a lot of information. So, is Spring-Heeled Jack a dangerous entity, a dangerous demon, or is it just some dude having a laugh? Or, you know, it's hard. But I do really like this story, I suppose. You know, and the reason I put it into the podcast is because is it a dangerous dude or is it a dangerous demon? So, and when I was reading into it, and I've known about it for quite some time, you know, and I just really wanted to do it because I just love the thought of like this. I think it's a guy, right? Initially.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just love the thought of this guy just dressing up and going around and just like being absolutely weird. I mean, it sounds terrible because he was just absolutely terrorizing women. You know, it sounds bad, but he's basically just created himself. He's the first urban legend, really.
Right.
Before that, there wasn't really. Obviously, you get different sort of ghost stories and stuff like that. But think about it. And I was thinking about it sort of independently without kind of sort of going off the research and stuff like that. But he's got long claws. I mean, that's Freddy Krueger, isn't it? He's got this long cape and he jumps from building to building. That's Batman.
It is.
You know, so I think that this character has just influenced like so much through... In Western culture, if you like, or in British culture and potentially American culture. He probably is just some weirdo running around, but for someone to have a 200-year legacy is pretty impressive, to be fair.
Well, like I said, I think he's probably done a few of them, and then he's given other people the sort of the option to dress up as him and carry on his legacy, but also kind of get away with it as well and blame it on him.
Yeah,
you know, it's anyone can dress up as Spring Heel Jack and go out and be a minor inconvenience to some women, and you know.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think it sounded like it was a bit more of a minor inconvenience. I think it's some of the stuff sounded pretty horrific, and it's kind of weird as well. So, like, the actual stories and tales that are in the newspaper are of these horrific events and terrifying events that take place to these teenage women, really.
Yeah.
Not teenage, but, you know, young women. Mm-hmm. I think they were teenage, weren't they? The two main stories, 18 or so.
Yeah.
But in the popular culture, he's actually portrayed as kind of a bit of more of a Robin Hood figure.
Right.
So he's a bit of a crime fighter, and, you know, against anti-establishment and all this, and you know, so he's got this kind of cult status without, you know, people don't realize that some people are actually terrified, and he might be responsible for a murder. We don't know. You know, it's just, I think it's a really good story, a really interesting story. I'd love to know behind it. So yeah, that's Springheel.
No, you've made me want to go and look more into it.
Definitely
interesting. Yeah,
it's difficult. It's a difficult one because it's so long ago. So it's hard to. I think you'd have to be a historian to kind of read stuff like that in the context of the time. But so that's Springheel Jack, a dangerous something from 200 years ago.
Yeah, that was really interesting. Like I said, you've made me kind of hungry to go and look more into it.
Do. In fact, go and have a look at the picture. Don't watch videos about it or whatever, because it'll just tell you what I've told you pretty much. It probably might go into more depth. But I think what is quite interesting, if you go and have a look at the pictures that were drawn in the newspapers and things like that, because they do make him look like a demon. He's got horns, you know, he's got bat wings and stuff, and it's really cool. Yeah. And there is just one more point that I want to make before we kind of do our finals and sign off.
Mm-hmm.
So this might give you a bit of a chill down your spine, actually, this. So reports of Springheel Jack started to subside in the late 1880s because London was hit by a new reign of terror by another particular Jack. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know who that is.
Yeah, Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout the investigation of Jack the Ripper, it's reported that the murderer would send letters to the police, so he'd mock them about the years committing the crimes and how poor the police investigation had been and things like that. Some might have been from the murderer, some might have been from hoaxes. I mean, I don't know why people do, you know, it's weird that, isn't it, when they send pretending to be a murderer and stuff.
Yeah, it's just people and fuck all better stuff to do.
So the police would receive these letters from Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very early in the investigation, on October the 4th in 1888, the police investigating the murders received a letter. They'd received several letters previously, but this one, it was quite different because it was signed Springheel Jack, the Whitechapel murderer.
Wow. Are there people out there that think he became Jack the Ripper?
No. I think it was just because Springheel Jack was such a cultural influence, I think someone had just kind of gone, I'm Springheel Jack. But I just found that kind of way. Imagine if it was. Imagine if Springheel Jack was Jack the Ripper. I don't think the times work, but...
No. It could have been one of the Springheel Jack tribute acts that decided to take it a step further, you know?
Like I say, someone, I think it was just because of the cultural influence of... Because of the influence of Springheel Jack at the time, or previously, perhaps 10, 15, 20 years earlier, they'd gone, oh, yeah, Springheel Jack. And then, obviously, it went on to, I'm Jack the Ripper, you know. So yeah.
Do you know, there's the story that Jack the Ripper was actually the masons that were killing all the prostitutes to clean up the streets.
Oh, really? I mean, Jack the Ripper might be a good pod, actually. I might do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a dangerous character, isn't it?
Oh, he was.
Yeah. Not off.
Dangerous, yeah. But he, they reckon they never caught him because it was actually lots of different people. It was all the masons that were trying to rid the streets of prostitutes, and they did it under the name of Jack the Ripper. And I've got my great-great-grandfather's certificate from when he joined the Masons in 1888.
Oh, right.
If he was still alive today, I could ask him if he was out killing prostitutes. But,
So that's it.
I'd like to ask him, but
so that's it. That's Spring-Heeled Jack.
Yeah, that's interesting.
A dangerous part of London history.
Yeah, it's maybe London's full of dangerous history, isn't it? Yeah, I want to go and learn more about it, but that's been interesting.
Please do. Yeah, like I say, have a look at the pictures, because I find the pictures more terrifying than the stories sometimes, particularly these old worldy, Victorian pencil drawings that they do of things. I find them quite creepy.
I tell you what, join our Facebook group. We'll put some pictures up there and you can tell us what you think about it.
Yeah. That's it. So that's me. I'm losing my voice now because that was a lot of talking. So it's an extra long episode mark our return.
Aye. If you've missed us, email in, let us know. Send us a message.
And we'll keep you updated. I think we're going to sort of go on more socials, I think, perhaps a Twitter page some point, but we'll let you know.
Yeah. We're going to be definitely a bit more active. So that's been fantastic, James.
Thank you very much. So anything further to add, or should we sign off?
Not really, no. Like I said,
you're going to put your costume on now and put your cape on, go and terrorize women,
scratch some women. I'm a bit old and tired for that these days.
These days, like you used to do it.
Yeah. It's after 10 o'clock. I don't go out.
Yeah, time for bed.
Soon, about 9:30, my aim of the evening when it gets to 9:30 is, when can I get to bed?
I want to go to bed the moment I wake up.
Yeah, how much shit do I need to do to get to bed?
Wake up in the morning, I'm like, I just wish I could go to bed.
I know. It's mad. How wonderful is a 10-minute nap now? And you just think, I'll just shut my eyes for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So on that note.
Thank you very much for listening. I think we'll leave it there.
Mm-hmm. All right. You're the host in this season. So
I am, yeah. Well, I wouldn't say for this season, but just try it. we'll alternate. Right. Thank you all so much for listening. Please do make contact with us if you want to hear. If you've got any suggestions or you just want to drop us a line and say hello, by all means, drop us a message and we'll see you next time on the Most Dangerous Podcast.
Thanks, James. Good night. Speak to you soon.
Good night.